the match is not about you, okay? And I think some referees kind of get on a power trip. They make the match about themselves, and they can be real jackasses about it.
What's the most efficient path to victory against this particular opponent?
He's dropping off the choke here. We could see the finish. It's looking tight. Tyler Delpre.
Hey guys, welcome to the Everyday Jiu-Jitsu Podcast. I'm your host, Matt Kwan. The Everyday Jiu-Jitsu Podcast is everything you need to know about jiu-jitsu. This week, we're going to discuss refereeing. If it's something that you're thinking about doing, if you're interested in refereeing, this is the episode for you. Essentially, this is a crash course on refereeing for beginners. I'm going to discuss some of my favorite tricks and tips for being a referee, as well as the knowledge that I've accumulated refereeing. I'm not going to go too much into the rule set. I think that can be found in different resources, such as the IBJJF Tutorials channel on YouTube, which is a fantastic resource if you want to learn the rule set of IBJJF. Also, there is ADCC seminars online on YouTube that you can watch, learn about the rules. Just understand that those are two very different rule sets. And as a referee, you do need to be prepared for whatever rule set that you're participating in. Before we get into the today's topic, I would like to remind you to please like, share, subscribe, comment. It really helps my algorithm when you guys leave comments in the comment section. And if you want to support the show, there's going to be links at the bottom for you to do so as per usual. Again, thank you everyone for the support. You guys make the show possible. Okay, so how long have I been a referee for? I've been refereeing now for probably about 2 years, and it's always something that I've really enjoyed. I look at refereeing as an opportunity to kind of test my knowledge in the game of jiu-jitsu, whatever rule set that may be. It's a great way to give back. I'm going to talk about reasons why I do referee, but there's a lot of good positive outcomes from refereeing. I always hear the thing about how being a referee is not easy. And at times it can be difficult for sure, but most of the time I find it a pretty easy job and I enjoy it. It's like solving a puzzle. As I'm watching these two athletes in front of me, I'm trying to decide, you know, what call should I be making? What is the best call? How well do I know the sport of jiu-jitsu? And it really does test you. So if you want to deepen your knowledge and your understanding of the sport of jiu-jitsu, doing referee work is one of the best ways you can absolutely do it. It can make you a better competitor as well. So first of all, you need to know the game. You need to study the rule set that you're refereeing at. I mentioned at the beginning of the show, ADCC and IBJJF are completely different sports. Yes, there's submissions and different positions that are the same throughout both sports. But that being said, it is very much a different sport. It's a different type of fight. Everything is different. No-gi IBJJF is very different from ADCC IBJJF. ADCC rule set. I'm not going to go into these differences, as I already did an episode where I compare ADCC and IBJJF. But studying the rule set for the competition that you are refereeing for is very, very important. Even if you're someone who's been a black belt for years, you know, if you stop studying because you think you know everything, you're going to fall behind. And before every tournament, generally the referees get together and they kind of have a powwow, they have a meeting and they discuss things, they answer questions. Now, a lot of these guys are black belts and they always have questions. We always reiterate sometimes the same thing. Sometimes there's new questions that come up. There's always new situations that come up. I can give you an example. One would be donkey guard, right? This is a position that you really don't see too often. And what we were wondering is, okay, if I sweep someone from donkey guard and I get on top, you know, should this score? Yes, it should score. What if it's ADCC and I put someone in donkey guard, I sweep them to top reverse mount? Technically, to me, that should be a clean sweep if I have both of their legs. They're not wrapping their legs around my body, so they don't have a guard. But what if they have two legs around my body and I sweep them? Well, that's a guard, I assume, right? What if I have only one of their legs trapped and one of the legs is over my back? Is that considered a guard, right? Like, these are the gray areas that keep coming up. And because jiu-jitsu is really limitless in its vastness, there's always going to be new situations, little intricacies, little nuanced scenarios that are really going to test you as a referee. And the best thing you can do is kind of is keep, try to stay on top of the rule sets, keep studying, right? Always have that Kaizen mindset. You're always trying to learn more about the rules and, you know, really just make the decisions to the best of your ability. So do your best to study the rules. Again, I think if you're going to be refereeing in IBJJF formats, that is probably the most common format you're going to see across most jiu-jitsu tournaments, especially in the gi. Check out IBJJF tutorials. Wonderful resource. Okay. Also, I think if you're interested in refereeing, you should be watching matches and look at the calls that the referees are making. Excuse me, I'm just having a coffee here. Like if I'm watching a match, a lot of the time I will referee it from a spectator point of view and I will see how accurate I am compared to the referee who's calling the match or if there's something that I would disagree with. And just so you guys know, IBJJF referees fuck things up all the time. I've spoken about this before. I believe part of that is because it's just one person making all of the decisions. And a lot of the time when that happens, there's a lot of pressure on that person. Plus they're doing a lot of different things. They're trying to keep the score. They're trying to make all the right calls. Whereas ADCC has two side table judges that also function as referees and they can help influence the score as well. So if the referee on the floor misses something, the two at the table can catch any slip ups. And I just think it's a better system, but of course it requires more staff. And as we all know in our sport, especially in IBJJF, they're very much about maximizing their profits, as we all know. Okay. Try to make the calls to the best of your ability and the best of your knowledge. Okay. And you know what? Everyone's going to make a mistake when they referee. Everybody is going to have slip ups here and there. One of the questions I always get is, okay, let's say I make a mistake and I hear someone yelling at me from the sidelines and now I'm second guessing myself. Did I make a mistake? Did I not? Guys, try to make the call to the best of your ability, but I don't see anything wrong if you can with stopping a match and asking someone else about their opinion on something. I'll give you an example. Somebody did a rib compression, which is basically the old Josh Barnett, you know, scarf hold, and then you're cranking on your partner's ribs. This was something that I was refereeing for white belt. And the tournament that I was refereeing at said no rib compressions. And I said, hey, to me, that looks like a rib compression if I've ever seen one. I said, no, this is legal. This is, the guy tapped out from it. And I said, okay, hold on. And I went and grabbed the tournament organizer who I could see. And he came, I said, hey, and this is a local level tournament. We're not talking like IBJJF, you know, a big tournament. And I said, hey, this is the technique. Is this allowed? I view this as a rib compression. And he's like, oh no, the rules are kind of vague here. When we say rib compression, we mean like someone's in the closed guard. The person on the bottom puts a body triangle on and squeezes and the person on top taps out. This we're going to consider legal. And I'm like, cause it's just side control pressure. I'm like, okay. So I was about to DQ that guy, but I actually got a second opinion on the topic. And then I just, I called it as a submission as it was a legal hold. I could have DQ'd the guy, raised the guy's hand, and then they both walk off and one guy's upset and the other guy thinks he won, and then maybe I made the wrong call, right? Like we don't know. So what I'm saying is don't be afraid to be kind of transparent out there. If you don't know the answer, that's okay. Just like as I'm an instructor in the gym, when someone asks me a question, I don't have the answer. One thing I try not to do is bluff my way through it and give bad advice or give advice that I later find to be wrong. It's okay to say, hey guys, like let's take a sec here. I don't need to come up with a decision right now. I'm going to get a second opinion on this rather than just make my own call. All right. And another thing I would recommend is, you know, as a referee, if I make a mistake during a match and it costs somebody a match, like that shouldn't go unnoticed. In my mind, that should kind of keep me awake at night. And I have made a couple bad calls. I don't make bad calls too often, to my knowledge, but there's been a couple that I've missed. That, once I reviewed with one of the head referees, I realized I made the wrong call. And the truth is that this really eats at me because maybe I ruined that kid's day. Maybe that parent, you know, spent a lot of money to sign that kid up. And now I've just like made the wrong call and that kid's done for the day when maybe he should have moved on. Like this stuff does happen. And if you do make a mistake, it's not the end of the world. I think it's important to, if you realize you made a mistake and you have the opportunity to apologize to that person, for me, I would do it. I think a lot of people, their egos are too big to ever admit they're wrong or to apologize or admit fault. But hey, like as refs, we're just trying to do the best we can. Sometimes in certain situations, it can be a quite a difficult sport to call. And other times, most of the time, I find it quite easy to call. So there's a wide spectrum of difficulty when you're a referee. And I think it's okay to say, hey, you know what? I made a mistake. I messed up. I'm sorry. I apologized. You know, I should have done this, blah, blah, blah. And just try to keep things as justified and as fair and even as you possibly can. So really making the calls the best of your ability and your knowledge. And if you do mess up, try to learn from that. And if you have situations where maybe you didn't know the call or you didn't know if you were making the right call, look at that as a learning opportunity. If something stumps you, ask someone about that, right? The people in your life who referee, the people who are high level black belts who are really understand the rules, ask them about these scenarios and see if you can get a better answer. At the very least, if you can't get an answer from these people, you can always email IBJJF. And they're actually, I will say this, for all my criticisms of IBJJF, they're very good about, if you email them with questions, they get back to you pretty quickly. Okay, be as fair and as impartial as possible. So let's say you're refereeing one of your friends. Okay, you shouldn't give them an edge. This should go without saying. It should be, you shouldn't be partial to one side, right? Even if, let's say the person you're refereeing two people and one of them is part of your team. First of all, I don't think referees should participate in matches and referee someone who's directly in their school, because that really is a conflict of interest. But let's say I'm a member of GB and there's someone from GB from a different location. Don't give that person any favors just because they're part of the same umbrella team that you are part of. That's very unfair. Obviously, of course, the old thing that people say in IBJJF is like, if I'm Brazilian, I will have an advantage when I compete, right? Compared to a gringo, especially if the referee is Brazilian, right? And if you're speaking Portuguese to each other, all of a sudden it's like, hey, this isn't fair. I'm the gringo who doesn't understand what you guys are saying. And that is true. So when you're the referee, you got to treat all athletes the same to the best of your ability. And I like to think that happens now more days, that there isn't a lot of home cooking going on and there isn't a lot of, favoring of one side over the other. I always try and call it straight down the middle. And a lot of the time when I'm refereeing at these local tournaments, I will have my student on my mat who's about to compete. And I always get somebody else to jump in and referee, because it's just not fair to be refereeing your own student. I think that's, that's a mistake for sure. So here's one of the best tips that I've learned as a referee. This has helped me so many times. I got this from a guy named Drew Weatherhead. He's a black belt who lives in Alberta on the prairies of Canada. He's a content creator. I believe he's a gym owner as well. And Drew taught me this trick. I saw it on an Instagram reel where basically this will help you keep track of which athlete was on top or which athlete was on the bottom. So of course, when you're a referee, one of your hands has a watch on it and the other hand has a wristband on it. And the wristband is to signify the colored athlete or the colored gi, right? The blue gi, or if it was white gis, it would be the black or the blue gi versus the white gi. Okay. If two white gis, one of them wears the ridiculous green yellow belt thing, then that would be, represented by the wristband. So anyways, what he does is let's say somebody pulls guard, then what he'll do is immediately whatever athlete's on top, he will cross that hand over and cover the other wrist. So if the colored gi pulls guard, he will cover the wristband and he'll just hold his hands. For those who can't see, I'm just holding my hands one over the other like this. So what happens is if there's a scramble and you forget at the beginning of the exchange who was on top or bottom, you can look down and see, oh yeah, the colored gi was on the bottom, and this will help you decide what points you're going to give. This is a really fantastic tip. It's simple and it can help you keep track of who's on top, who's on bottom. It's definitely been something that I use every single tournament since I saw that tip. So thank you, Drew, for that. Also, you have to know that really what you're doing is to prioritize the athlete's safety and prioritize the fairness of outcome. So I already talked about being transparent as a referee, not, you know, I made a mistake, blah, blah, blah. Try to find the best way to make a decision as a referee. The number one thing I care about is it fair? Because at the end of the day, these people are spending a lot of money to compete. And, you know, it really, the match shouldn't be about me as the referee. I shouldn't even be, I shouldn't have any spotlight. That match is about the two competitors. And if you start making the match about yourself and making calls that are ridiculous, or, you know, you're favoring one athlete, or you just want to have like a presence of power in the match, this is something that I recommend people don't do. It should be about the athletes showcasing their abilities. It's their opportunity to compete and to, you know, prove something to themselves and to other people. You should not even be involved as the referee. You are like, you're just there to make the call, but you shouldn't even have a presence, really. You shouldn't take any, the match is not about you, okay? And I think some referees kind of get on a power trip. They make the match about themselves, and they can be real jackasses about it. Like I said, athlete safety, super important. So let's contrast, you know, refereeing kids versus refereeing adults. If we referee kids, I've seen referees stop matches where kids are in arm bars and their arms aren't even unlocked, and they stop the match. I had to keep you safe. For me, this just shows that the referee doesn't really understand armbar finishing mechanics when they look at them. Okay. Things get into gray areas when kids start to like defend armbars and roll over, and they're in movement or their belly down and you can't see the arm is extended. So you have to make the best decision as a referee when you see an extended arm. Okay. Is there genuine breaking pressure? And is this arm bar really on? Sometimes you can look at their legs and their legs are just like flopping out of position. You're like, okay, there's no breaking pressure there. The arm bar isn't even applied properly. And sometimes the person will be defending the arm really, really valiantly, doing, you know, spinning, trying to come up on top, trying to stack. They're still in the arm bar. It looks like they're getting cranked, but they're still moving. They're still defending. Generally for me, I let arms go fully extended. And as long as there's intelligent defense, I let it go. I only stop the match if I truly can't see the extension of the arm and the position of the attacker's legs. And I can't make a call whether or not that kid is safe. If they can't move, if they're belly down and they have stopped moving and their arm is fully extended, I'm probably going to stop it because you're not moving. One of the biggest things that the defender needs to do to defend these joint locks is to create mobilization, to move. And the attacker needs to immobilize the shoulder girdle in order to actually apply genuine breaking pressure. So if I see that the bottom athlete or the defending athlete has stopped moving, then that's a telltale sign for me to start thinking about, I should finish this, okay? If the arm is fully locked, you know, the thumb is pointing in the wrong direction, in the correct direction, and the legs are tight, I'm probably going to stop that match. But I'm not going to just stop it as soon as the person throws the leg over the head. I'm always going to give them a chance to defend. And some people disagree with this. I've seen, like most referees, especially on a local level, as soon as that arm is extended, they stop it. And this can be a really sad thing because, you know, what are we teaching these kids? We're not letting them have any late stage defenses. Plus that parent might think, well, that was bullshit. I know my kid can get out of that. Or at least you didn't even give him a chance to get out of it. And that might reflect on whether or not they're going to sign that kid up for another tournament. Okay. And, or even worse, if that kid ever wants to compete again, well, I got screwed over in the last tournament by the referee. My arm was extended. It wasn't even on and they called the match. Right. And so I'm probably not going to sign my kid up for that tournament anymore. These are the things we want to avoid. A lot of the time, if you give kids a chance to tap and you can tell what an arm bar is, you can make the correct call. And even if a kid gets their arm popped, it's very rare that a child will actually get an arm fully broken, okay? And even if it did break, kids heal so fast that it's really, in the grand scheme of things, it's not as bad as, say, an adult was to break their arm, okay? So there's different trains of thoughts there. I've had kids who are in full-on arm bars, they're trying to escape, they're trying to move around, but I see that the arm is fully extended. I feel like, okay, this is now getting into popping territory, and I stop it. And then after the match, the parent came up to me and said, "Hey, listen, my kid doesn't tap to arm bars. Thank you for stopping the match. That was the right call." And I'm like, "Okay, that's really great to hear. Thank you so much. I couldn't see it. I couldn't see any like intelligent defense from there, and the arm was fully locked. So I felt like I need to stop this. So I will probably let submissions go a little bit further than other people will. When it comes to like kimuras, as soon as the arm goes behind the back, I'm already thinking about stopping it, unless there's like immediate intelligent defense from the person defending, which is very hard to do when your arm is behind your back. Okay. In terms of strangles, probably going to let that shit go. Probably going to let kids be in full rear naked chokes and decide when they want to tap out. I might see a kid start crying. If I see a kid start crying, generally I have to make a call. Is that the end of the match or not? If a kid starts crying, you're supposed to end the match as far as I know. However, I have been known to give kids a second chance if it's just because they're overwhelmed, okay? But generally, if a kid is already at the point where they're breaking and they're starting to cry, it's very hard for them to recover, okay? And generally, these are kids who are still getting over that crying phase in tournaments. And, you know, it's a reoccurring thing. You see the same kids crying. They cry not because they're hurt, but because they're losing. And sometimes when I see that, I'll just stop the match. I'll say, yep, that's it. You cannot, when you're going to compete, you can't come in here and cry just because you're in bottom side control and you can't get out. And this is something for the coach to work with the student for. Another thing as a coach, you know, when you're teaching arm bars to kids and you're talking about escapes, I always tell the kids in my room, hey, just so you guys know, if your arm is fully extended, expect the match to end. I don't care if you tap, the match is probably going to end. So in order to stop that, get your hands together or start moving your body, start stacking, start turning, create movement so that it looks like you're defending. It's very hard for a referee to stop if you're in motion, okay? The referee will usually let it play out, but once the motion stops, once you're dead to rights with a fully locked arm, expect that referee to stop the match. And I tell the kids that so that there's no surprises. Oh, I didn't tap. Oh, it didn't hurt. Yeah, but you didn't have defense. So prepare for referees to take extra steps to keep you as kids safer, okay? Sorry, another sip of coffee here. So let's talk about why we would referee. I think it's really important to referee for the right reasons. There's many different reasons to referee. The reason why I did it is because it just interested me. I like that as well, but to understand the game better, to gain experience, to become a better competitor, really good competitors are very good referees, okay? Learning how to referee will help you understand the rule set and therefore make you a more effective competitor. It will also help you coach people in your gym when it comes to getting prepared for competitions. If you understand the nuances of the game, you can show people where they can score points and where they can deny their opponent points. It's a great way to give back to the jiu-jitsu community in your area. When you participate and you're seen at tournaments, you're giving back, you're networking with these people. It helps helps to grow the sport. Another thing is it's a great way to market yourself. So I've had people join my gym because they like the way I referee, which is fucking crazy. Like, people have come from other gyms, they see how I referee and they're like, this guy clearly understands the rule set more than my instructor. I'm going to go under this guy. I'm not shitting you guys. That's happened to me before. So it's a great way to market yourself, to be seen in the community, to have a presence within the entire community and show that you're giving back and supporting these local tournaments so that, you know, who knows, maybe one day some of these athletes can really go and compete at a world level, right? And then the last stage I think should be, or the last reason should be money, okay? And honestly, some tournaments pay pretty fucking good. Like, we're talking like $300, even $400 sometimes for a whole day's work. That's good money to me for refereeing, and it's fun for me, and, you know, you get to watch fights, and you get to work with kids, and for me, that's awesome. I would love to go work, you know, an eight hour shift, make $300, $400 or whatever, just refereeing jiu-jitsu. It's pretty chill if you enjoy the job. And I think money should be one of the last reasons why you would do something like this, though. You know, It's a perk of the job, but it shouldn't be the main purpose. Really, the purpose should be improvement of yourself, giving back to the community, helping jiu-jitsu in your area, and networking, you know, marketing yourself as a jiu-jitsu personality, gym owner, whatever it is you do. Okay, let's talk about this. Drop the ego. So again, I talked earlier about how some referees are fucking assholes. They will try to make the match about them being the, you know, the powerful one. And we've all seen this. It happens in other sports too, where the referee gets so involved, they're calling a lot of penalties, and it becomes more about them asserting their power, right? Just understand that you're not always right and you're not perfect. This goes for everything in life. Me as a jiu-jitsu coach, me as a person, you're not always perfect. You're not always right. So drop the ego. Don't go into a tournament with an ego or a chip on your shoulder with something to prove. And you want to, you know, make the match, make yourself a main pillar of the match. You're there to help the athletes express themselves and to call the best, safest match that you possibly can and get the most justified outcome you can. End of story. But that being said, it's okay to stand up for yourself. If somebody is arguing with you on the mats, penalize their asses, right? There is a rule in IBJJF where if you even talk to the referee, you will get a penalty. I don't really follow that rule strictly at the local level. However, if someone's rude to me, I'm definitely going to penalize them. If there's a parent from the side who's yelling at me, and that doesn't happen too much anymore from what I've seen, it used to happen a lot. I think nowadays they're more in tune with the rules. They understand what's going on more and it happens less. But if that is happening, usually what I'll do is after the match, I'll go over and I'll talk to them and I'll say, you know, why aren't you refereeing? Why aren't you contributing? You seem to know the rules better than me. Why aren't you refereeing? Do you train? Oh, you don't even train. Who are you to give me advice? Do you know what I mean? Like, you don't have to be rude about it, but you could just have that conversation. It's better than returning the same energy that you would get from someone who's jeering at you from the sidelines. Okay, so it's okay to stand up for yourself and to defend yourself and defend your team of referees. I already talked about making the best call to your ability. And really what that comes down to is your perception of the situation. Your perception of the situation might be completely different from one of the coaches in the corner of the athletes. It could be completely different from another referee. It could be completely different from someone in the stands. And really at the end of the day, it's all up to your perception. I'll give you an example. Let's say I'm playing guard and somebody's on top and they do a knee cut. And from that knee cut, they clearly pass my legs and I start wrestling up on a single leg. And then I come up and I finish a sweep. How do you score that? Someone might look at that and say, well, it was all in one continuous movement as I was on my back and I came up and turned into a single leg, so it should be two. Somebody else might say, no, that person hit a knee cut. They were past the hips. As they passed the hips, the person was coming up, got a single leg, and now that should be an advantage for the pass, and the person on the bottom did not sweep from a guard. This is a ridiculous rule, by the way. I fucking hate that rule. So how should this be scored? Should it be an advantage for the guard passer and now he's on the bottom? Or should it be a sweep from the bottom player? It can't be both. This is all up to the referee's perception. In that moment, the referee must make a call. Who is initiating? Is it the sweeper from the bottom? What can we say that was a sweep from a guard? Or was it the person on top, you know, hitting a pass, and then they ended up on the bottom getting reversed from a position that's not a guard? So these little nuances exist everywhere. I can't tell you how often I've seen referees give 2 points off of a sweep without 3 seconds going by. Ridiculous. This is so fucking easy. This is one of the most basic rules. You know, you see an athlete switch positions with another athlete, they switch top to bottom, instant 2 points. It's like, dude, you got to count 3 seconds. This happens all the time. So you really have to just look at it as a test for yourself. And like I said, if you make a bad fucking call, that should haunt you. That should follow you home so that if you're going to referee again, you're really remembering that moment and you're thinking about it. And like I said before, don't be afraid to change your mind or admit that you made a mistake. most people, if you make a call that fucks them over or fucks their kid over and it ruins their day, maybe you made the wrong call. If you go to that person after and say, listen, I made a mistake. I'm sorry. You know, mistakes happen. I really apologize. Most of the time they forgive you. You'd be shocked if you're just, if you're humble and if you are transparent with people, how much they will give back to you. Okay. But if you say, no, fuck you. Like I made the call because that's the call I saw. And you know, don't talk to me like that. A lot of people will, they will think of you like, oh, this guy's an asshole. This tournament's a joke. The referees are horrible. Okay. And there are local tournaments here. I'm not going to name them, but there's a local tournament here that is notorious for bad refereeing. And I have so many athletes and parents come to me and say, we're not supporting this tournament because the referees are horrible. And that's the worst thing you as a referee want to do for an organization, right? You're there to help push the organization forward and give everyone a good time and call it right. You are not there to, you know, give them a bad reputation just because you have no idea what you're doing. So don't be afraid to do that. You know, if you make a bad call, it's okay to go to someone and say, hey, like I made the wrong call. I apologize. Everyone makes mistakes and I'm just a human being. I'm going to learn from this. Like that's totally forgivable. And, yeah, that is sort of how I would approach that if I ruin someone's day. All right, we're going to talk about referee etiquette. So first of all, professionalism. You know, some tournaments before an event will send out like a mass email to the referees and say, hey, like here are some do's and don'ts for those of you who are new to refereeing. But like essentially, you don't want to be standing around hands in your pockets. You don't want to have like conduct that makes you look disinterested in the situation. I'm always on my phone, right? Standing on the mats on my phone or sitting on my butt on the mats. You know, you got to have your uniform looking good. If you're going to step into a coaching position that day, maybe you're coaching and reffing, which I often do, you got to cover your uniform with like a sweater or something so that it doesn't look like a referee is coaching. Simple things like this. Making sure that your shirt's tucked in. Usually, locally at tournaments, you will be supplied with some kind of a uniform, like a shirt, but your pants, like have them pressed or at least clean and wrinkle free. The IBJJF rule set, I believe, says that you need to have a wristwatch so that you can make calls on penalties and things like this, and a belt. Okay. And these are, you know, this is all part of your uniform. So they want a professional unified look. And so it's important to follow this. You want to obviously avoid any unprofessional language or gestures, you know, anything that's going to show that you are, that you're partial to one athlete. So if an athlete does something awesome and you start like applauding, that's not good. It looks like the referee is favoring one athlete. So just basically treat it as if you are on the job and your boss is constantly watching you, right? That doesn't mean that you can't have fun or smile or laugh or have a good time or even make jokes. It just means don't be inappropriate, and your body language should look like, hey, I'm excited to be here. I'm passionate to be here and I'm here to do a job. I'm going to fucking do it well. I'm going to call it right down the middle. I'm not going to take this as a joke and just come here for my paycheck. If you're going to do that, like I wouldn't want you refereeing my match personally. Okay. Just understand again, just reiterate what I said, that your actions and your ability to do your job as a referee, that directly influences the experience of the participant and the parents and the spectators. And that could be the difference between somebody signing up for that tournament again or not ever wanting to do it again. And furthermore, it could follow you around. It could follow you around as in terms of professionalism as the referee who sucks. Okay. And I'm going to share a funny story later about this exact situation. Okay. Let's talk now about mat awareness. This is very important. I saw horrendous injury as a ref. I wasn't a referee. I was down in the States in Linden, Washington, and I saw a referee completely get his knee destroyed. It was so, so sad, so fucked up, especially someone who's had knee injuries. I saw a referee, basically standing there not facing the mat next to him. The mats were shockingly small, actually. The mat spaces were small. And what this results in is people are running out of bounds, especially like big guys who never want to pull guard. These heavyweight guys that are just, you know, they're doing the shitty high school wrestling match type judo where they're standing and gripping each other and they're getting penalties because nobody's shooting. And they're just basically looking to win on a snap down and a go behind, right? Like this is how some, you know, big purple belts fight. And, you know, one guy took a shot and ran the other guy off the mats, and the ref had his back turned, and they fell sideways into his knee, and his knee was fucked. He was out for he's the whole tournament now. He's on the sidelines. He's crying because he realizes what this means, and apparently his whole knee got destroyed because these two big guys fell into his knee. So we have to be aware of this as referees. Do shoulder checks often when you're a referee. When I'm reffing, I'm always thinking, okay, what is my orientation to other mats? And also, just as a courtesy thing, am I standing in front of the parents or people who are potentially filming this? Because as a competitor, I like to film pretty much all of my matches if I can. So the worst is when a referee is standing between you and the athletes, and now the athletes do something cool, but the referee was in the way and you didn't catch it on tape. That's so disappointing for an athlete, right? So I don't have to do that. I could stand in front of the camera. I don't give a fuck, and that's fine. But I think it's better if just to have that common courtesy. So generally, if I have the choice between standing in front of the spectators and standing in front of the score table, I'll stand in front of the score table so that there's a clear view of the athletes. But first things first, I need to prioritize my job, which is make the best call possible. So if I do need to stand in front of them to get a better look, unfortunately, that takes precedent over somebody filming. The next thing would be, okay, there's two, let's say I'm in the middle mat and there's two mats, one to either side of me. I need to be aware that, especially in a smaller mat space, I need to be aware that at any time people can come crashing into me. Okay, the reason that this happened in Washington is because the girl who was refereeing her match, first of all, a small girl is refereeing these two giant heavyweights. So she's not able to physically touch them or move them or anything. And as one shoots and drives onto the other mat, that referee was completely out of position. Not only were they completely out of position, they didn't even yell stop, and they just ran off the mats into the other referee who had his back turned. Generally, what I like to do if I'm on the edge of a mat or near the edge of the mat, I suspect it might go towards me, is I put my back to the mat, and if there's another referee there, I like to go back to back. Okay, so we have each other's back. He's going to make sure his athletes don't collide into me. I'm going to make sure my athletes don't collide into them. I would say people are less likely to run off the mats if a referee is standing right there. Okay, just in their peripheral, they will make judgment based on where that person is and avoid running into them. So if going back to back with a referee on a border and sort of like keeping each other safe is really good. But the worst thing you can do is could be completely out of position. And then as they're running off the mats, you don't even yell stop until the damage is done, right? Usually if I see that happening and they're running out of bounds, and this is not ADCC, this is IBJJF, I'm going to be yelling stop. And even trying to get in the way if possible. And I'm always trying to keep the athletes in the middle if possible. I'll even be verbal about this, you know, keep it in the middle, guys. Let's keep it in the middle, because a lot of athletes will, whether you like this or not, intelligently stand near the outside in a strategic way so that if they get taken down, they can kind of, whoops, I bailed outside. And that's actually a really good strategy for the IBJJF rule set. For ADCC, they don't give a fuck. Okay. Go into the clothing stand over there, go into the parking lot and keep fighting. As long as there's action, they're just going to keep fighting, right? So that's a little, again, that's where the sports are a little bit different. But my point being is, always be shoulder checking, be looking at not just your athletes, but the athletes next to you. Do not stand with your back to another mat space and have no idea what's going on behind you. There is a high risk of injury if you do this. You always have to look, okay, where's the other referee? Where are my athletes? Where's the athletes behind me? Where's the athletes in front of me on the other mats there? Where, like, you are not just supposed to tune out and focus 100% on your match. You have to keep your wits about you and keep yourself safe, because like I said, you can get injured in these situations. And, you know, sometimes I could see how somebody who's new to reffing could easily overlook this aspect of refereeing. All right. When you're a referee, know when you need to take a break. I will say this. I said it was an easy job. And to me, a lot of the time being a referee is a pretty easy job. But you referee for 2-3 hours straight, no break, it's going to be hard. Okay. And ref days can be extremely long. And I've had some ref days that are very short. You know, I've done a tournament in under 6 hours, and I've had tournaments that go 8+ hours. Okay. So you never really know what you're in for. You never know how many participants there are, but just make sure that you are getting enough rest time and you're switching in with people, especially, you know, if you have students competing. A lot of time in the situation that I'm in is I have kids competing. And what that means is usually the kids go early in the first matches are the kids in the gi usually locally. And then we get that out of the way. And then the kids start no gi. So sometimes I'm usually taking my break first because I have to coach, but I can switch in and out if I'm communicating with the other refs. Make sure you're not just leaving your post and then all of a sudden there's no referee there. Like, let someone know, hey, my student's about to go, I need to coach, can you cover me? Oh, hey, I got to go use the can you cover me? Oh, it's almost my break time, I need someone to cover me. Do not just be someone who disappears. Or, and when you take a break, you know, obviously don't take longer breaks than you've agreed to, right? Like, try to keep your relationships with the other refs in good standing. Do not just abandon your post and be MIA just because you had other obligations. That's fine. You have other obligations. Maybe you're competing that day. Maybe you're coaching. Maybe you're doing both. Maybe you can't be present in that moment. Just use communication and let people know where you're going to be so that they're not like, hey, where the fuck's Matt? What's he doing? Like, he's supposed to be here right now. Now we're running behind. This is not a good scenario, right? So I understand days are long. Get your breaks, get refreshed, have coffee, whatever you need. Make sure that you're bringing food, or that if the tournament's providing food, you know, that's great. Just make sure that your needs are met in that way. All right, this last one. So this is important. Don't disparage the other refs. Like, if you see a ref make a bad call, don't be like, in front of them, you're chastising them or even giving them criticism in front of people. Okay. You are a team. You and your referee comrades are there to have the most successful tournament you can possibly have, to do the best job you can have, and to represent yourselves and the tournament well, and the sport. Okay. You want people to go away, win or lose, with a good experience, and you got to work as a team. If you start, you know, giving people shit that are refereeing, then it doesn't look good. Okay. Especially if you're arguing with other referees, that doesn't look good. It doesn't look like you're working as a team. It doesn't look like anyone knows what's going on. It doesn't look like you're professional. There's nothing wrong with giving constructive criticism to a referee if you think they fucked up a call, but do it confidentially. Don't do it in front of people. Just before we go, I'll share a story with you. And I'm not going to say names, but I was at a tournament and I was in the back having a coffee break, right? It was my turn to have a lunch break or whatever. And then one of the guys, there is one referee, I'm not going to say his name, locally, who's notoriously bad. I don't know. He's one of the most like experienced referees ever. And he just makes fucking horrible calls. Okay. And calls where someone will get swept and he immediately awards two when he shouldn't, right? Like really basic calls that he shouldn't miss. And yet he keeps getting asked to referee. And one of the guys comes in, this is what not to do. One of the referees comes in, he's a Filipino guy. I'm not going to say his name. He comes in, he says, so-and-so, this guy's so fucking bad. Oh my God, this guy making the worst fucking call ever. How the fuck does this guy keep refereeing? Oh my God. I'm just like in front of like other referees in the back area where we're all having like snacks and drinks. I'm just like, holy fuck, dude. Like, this is what we're not supposed to do. This is, you know, I agree with you. Absolutely. This guy is like a terrible referee. But that being said, like, that's what you should not do. Don't go in and just air your grievances with everyone because we're all thinking it. if, you know, if I was going to, I would go to someone and say, hey, like, don't you think this guy fucking sucks? Like, he's kind of a bad ref. He's constantly making bad calls. I see it happen all the time, and he's ruining the vibe for everyone. He's ruining everyone's day. So, that is, you know, to do that in front of everyone, that's an example of what not to do. Right. And don't be loud and obnoxious about it, but holy fuck, it was funny, man. Cause I was like, yes, I totally agree with you, but that's not cool. You shouldn't do that. We're supposed to be a team. We're a cohesive unit. All right, guys. That's all I got for you guys today. And I hope that that was somewhat helpful. Again, there's so many little things that you'll learn as a referee if it's something that you want to do. And please leave in the comment section if there's tips and tricks being a referee that, you know, I missed, because that's very, very likely. But I would recommend, if you're, you know, a high level jiu-jitsu fighter, you want to become a better competitor, you want to give back to your community, and you want to make a little bit of money, I think refereeing is a great thing to do. Before I go, please like, share, subscribe to the channel, leave comments wherever you can. If you want to support the show, guys, check out the online academy at the bottom. That's the best way to support. Also, you can buy merchandise. You can buy my kid's book. You can also just leave a donation at PayPal, which is in the bottom. All of these really, really help me. I appreciate you guys listening to the show. Other than that, just remember, Everyday Jiu-Jitsu Podcast is everything you need to know about jiu-jitsu. And I'm going to see you guys later. Bye-bye.